Hello, hello, everybody.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Soul Talk with host Jeremy McDonald, the author of Peace Be Still. You can check out more about our shows or about Jeremy at soultalkradio.org and jeremymcdonald.net. And now for our show.
Hello, hello, everybody. One of these days I'm going to get used to that intro for the show and the many times I've said hello before it. I am excited today about having two wonderful guests and beautiful energies on the show. They are the author of Magic and Initiatory Practices of Ancient Egypt. And I'm excited to have Normandy Ellis calling in from Indiana and Nikki Stelly calling in from Eugene, Oregon. Welcome to the show, Normandy and Nikki. How are you today?
Thank you. Doing well.
Thank you. Doing well.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm pretty excited about the work and that you do. And you know, as we were talking about before, I haven't had a chance to finish all the books. But when I saw the subject matter, of the book, a few months ago when I was presented the idea, I was so excited because the union. The first thing I thought was the union of the divine feminine and the divine masculine. Even though they're ever present in our world, it's divided to me and sometimes in our mind. Well, actually not sometimes. The world is divided in the mind. And I was so excited that the mystery schools of ancient Egypt are being taught and brought forward so much in our world. So I just had to share that with you. I'm very excited about having you on the show just because of that very reason. And then listening to some of your interviews, I could tell it's just such a wonderful beautiful lights you are. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Absolutely. So how did you, what was the journey? I mean, I know you guys have been working on this book for, well, at least this work for a long, long time and this subject matter for, up to two decades. What got you started in the path of, Egyptian mystery schools and teaching mysticism and bringing this forward? What got you on this path?
Well, I'll start with my story that Nikki always prods me to tell, but I didn't tell the last time, so I get to tell it now. I had been studying metaphysics and mysticism while I was in my 20s, and a fellow that was a neighbor up the street from me had studied to become a Rosicrucian before he left for Vietnam because he was going to be a medic and assist souls in transition. So when he came back, he and I had this long conversation about metaphysics, and he convinced me to go across the street, and he even walked with me, put in my hand the Egyptian Book of the Dead, complete with its hieroglyphs, and said, "Here, buy this." Like, okay, sure, it looks great. So I bought the book and I never thought much about it. That night, he brings me all of his Rosicrucian teachings in a big box and says, "Hang on to these. I have to leave town." Like, okay, fine. So I hang on to his box of books. He doesn't come back for several months, and I move to Colorado, take the books with me. Long story short, he died. He was... he died within a year. And so the books suddenly took on this incredible vibration and became the subject that I wanted to pursue in my translation workshop where I was studying. I translated the Book of the Dead for 10 years. I just forward and backward. It was so rich. It was my life. And it was not my husband at the time's life, and he wanted me to throw it away. So I, like a good wife, put it in the back of my car, and I'm driving up to the dumpster to throw it away in the middle of the night. And my friend Robert appeared in the back seat of my car. I could see him just bald as an Egyptian priest wearing this long robe. And I thought, okay, that's the power of imagination. So I just kept driving, and his spirit reached out and touched my right shoulder. It was like I'd put my finger in a light socket. And I slammed the brakes on in the car, and I look behind me, and he's still there. And I said, "Robert, don't do that again because you scared the hell out of me." And then, boom, he was gone. I take the manuscript and all of the books and hide them in the wheel well of the car because I know my husband thinks I can't change tires. So I put them there. And I continue translating until 3 months later, someone says, you wouldn't happen to have a book of those translations, would you? And I published Awakening Osiris. And it was Awakening Osiris in 1988 that eventually brought Nikki and I together, for that was a book that she had used at Jerry Garcia's funeral. So do you want to tell them about that part, Nikki?
A dear friend of both of ours gave me a copy of that book. Actually, I don't know whether you actually knew him, but he was at that time.
No.
He was a great fan of yours, and he said, you need to have this book. And this is back in the 80s, I guess. And so I discover that this is the most incredible book that I had ever come across. It's like, you know, that you talk about what's the one book you'd want to have if you were marooned on an island. You know, it would be Awakening Osiris. And I used it for everything, weddings, funerals. I did get the nerve up to go up to Jerry's coffin and read it right to him. The Becoming the Phoenix chapter, which opened in like bibliomancy that morning. And at a certain point, I just realized I had to know this woman. And so I called someone that I knew would have her number. I think it was John Anthony West. And he gave me her number, and I made a cold call and asked for Normandy. And her daughter was a young teenager then, or maybe even a preteen, and she goes, Mom, it's one of those. But I got a very warm reception to my cold call. And
we fell in love with each other over the phone.
And we just started working together. I don't even remember what the first thing we did was, whether I took you to Egypt or whether we started our mystery school first. I don't really remember what happened, the order of things. But we, after about 17 years of mystery school is when we realized, you know, we sort of got the knock on the head saying, okay, it's time. You know, you've got to get your book. But in that interim, when Normandy was helping me prepare the manuscript for Alchemical Healing for Inner Traditions, Bear and Company, gave her a transmission into a Thoth lineage that I hold. And we were at her home in Kentucky at the time, and it was like a hieroscamus. It was a sacred marriage, and we realized it, but we didn't know what it meant. And but we knew it was the conception of something, and it turned out to be the conception of the union of Isis and Thoth, and that's why the actual title of the book is The Union of Isis and Thoth, Magic and Initiatory Practices of Ancient Egypt. And how I got interested in Egypt was in 1978, the Grateful Dead played three or four nights at the Great Pyramid. And I was blessed at that time. I was married to one of their managers. And so I was able to go on that trip. And that was a pivotal point in my life. It was one epiphany after another, one synchronicity after another. And I was back three or four times that first year. And then 10 years later, I started taking groups. And I've taken more than 60 groups, 7 of which were with Normandy. So that's sort of the background that took us to the book. And when it came time to write it, you know, then we had to look back at what we'd created in those 17 years and what was the most important thing. So that was the difficult part. Go ahead, Normandy. Mm-hmm. I've talked to
her. Right. No, you didn't. She's right. It was difficult to decide out of all those 17 years of mystery schools plus the trips, what was the most important thing that we had done? Because we did a number of things, and we did some things multiple times, and we never knew exactly what we were going to be doing until about 2 or 3 days before the workshop happened.
Sometimes a week.
Sometimes a week, but we would think we would know what it is, and then, you know, we would bring in Isis and Thoth to start talking to us, and they would give us a whole new view of what was going on. So I think that kept our energy and our juices excited about what we were doing, because it was a mystery to us as well. Even though we knew the material, how it was coming about and where it would land was always very exciting and very new. But one of the things that became very, very strong with both of us was that very powerful mystery school in which we began to do the work of creating the etheric temple. And that had not been too long before we started to write the book, and that became the focus of what we were doing.
Can I just interject here?
Sure.
The whole mystery school had been creating a communal etheric temple, but at that point, it was time to teach and learn through teaching the building of the Adidam, which is the etheric temple within.
Right.
So the book includes the directions for both.
Right.
How our communal temple that's on my land here in Oregon came into being, and the magic that surrounded it, and the instructions that came from Seshat and all the deities that wanted to participate, and how we taught our students about the pantheon through bringing them into the temple and creating sanctuaries for them within the temple. But when it came time to building the inner temple, all the groundwork had been laid, and the building of the temple within is so important, because it allows each person to become a vessel fit for the divine. And the purpose of the book is to guide people, to give maps for that process, and then get into the fun part of what do you do in your sacred etheric inner temple, and all the different ways that you commune with your deity of choice and what you do together.
Right. I don't think it's that far removed to say that in many religious traditions, there is the notion that the body is a temple for the indwelling spirit of the divine, and that, you know, we're God sparks that are intended to walk and move through the world and to become enlightened beings, you know. But not everybody's going to be able to go to Oregon to work through Nikki's temple, or go to Egypt and work through the temples there. But many people have a connection to Egypt. It's so entrenched in so many people's psychology, the symbols, you know, and they want to understand, what does this mean in my life? So in this way, you can carry that ancient Egyptian temple within yourself if you so desire. Or you can create that temple for whatever spiritual power you decide to invite into that sacred space.
So you brought actually up a really good point that I just want to interject, because, you know, you mentioned a lot of sacred or spiritual paths talk about the body being the temple, and, you know, in the metaphysical world, we talk a tremendous amount about going in going into your inner world or working within, and you know, and stuff like that. What do you think the breakdown is where people understand that on an intellectual level? And of course, some say that it takes the 18-inch journey from the head to the heart to realize. What do you think is blocking them from knowing what they really want or desire is to have that relationship with their God spark within or the divinity within, but, you know, it's just not connecting? You know, is it practice, or is it, you know, they're just afraid, or, you know, because there's a lot of different theories that come with that. And I'm sorry, just kind of sparked my this question when you mentioned that.
Well, can I, what comes to mind to me when you ask that question is that what stands in the way of it is a misconception about the power of one's own will. That is, many people, you know, it's kind of, they have their own agenda, and they're not sure that it fits with whatever the divine agenda is for them. In some cases, one's personal will is ego, we'll say, is a little reluctant to step out of the way and just let the divine take over because, you know, we don't always know where the divine is going to take us. You know, we don't always know that after having written, you know, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, that I'm going to, you know, suddenly stop everything that I did as, you know, a marketing and PR person in the real world and suddenly devote my life to becoming a spiritualist minister and leading trips to Egypt. You know, but if I step out, the divine steps in and the whole game changes. And I think a lot of that is fear of the unknown. I think it's fear of the unknown. And so I would encourage people to sit in their meditations and create an aim, you know, for their spirit. This is my intention at this time for where I would like spirit to take me. And if spirit's willing to accompany me, then that's where we're going. And I may not know the final outcome.
It takes a lot of trust. And
yeah.
I think trust is one of the issues that many of us struggle with on a day-to-day basis, because there is so much chaos and so many distractions, and it appears to be such a struggle just to survive. And how much of that do we create for ourselves and let our self-saboteur run away with us? And how much can we heal simply by opening our hearts and trusting? Of course, I say simply, but that's not easy for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. It's an interesting when you get to that place of where you're trusting, I guess, more than you're fearing, and then it seems simple, but the process to get there is always simple, because you have to, you know, remind yourself to put faith and then believe. And then the belief and faith then starts to become a knowing, because you've practiced and witnessed so many times things happen right in front of you. Then it starts to become, at least for me, it's become this, well, why did I doubt this in the first place? You know,
right.
And you see a tremendous amount of wonderful things happen for you. It's a really
That reminds me of a favorite quote by a writer whose name is Andre, I think it's Dubas, and he writes in a short story about a man who's speaking to his priest, and the priest says, faith is believing in God. Belief is believing in God, but faith is believing that God believes in you.
Very cool.
I think that's really powerful to remember.
That is very powerful to remember. So, do you still do trips to Egypt? Or
yes, Normandy is actually leading a trip to Egypt in April, and we still have some space on it. And the beauty of our trips, especially now when things are so chaotic, is that we have a private dahabeah, which is like the kind of sailing yacht that the royalty used to use to ply the Nile, to sail the Nile. And that we are on that boat for 9 nights. And so we have the freedom to go wherever we please, when we please, and time things so that we have the temples to ourselves. Of course, there's very few tourists there right now anyway. But and so the other thing is the Egyptians are so happy to see us. I mean, they really are having a hard time with the chaos that's going on in the Middle East and how it's affecting tourism, which is a huge percentage of their economy. And so, you know, we're supporting them, and they know it, and they treat us beautifully. And, you know, with regard to the safety issue, which is everybody's issue right now, I mean, where is there that one can feel safe anymore?
Right.
You know?
I came back from Egypt and had the most wonderful trip of a lifetime.
This was just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was like a month ago. And we were safe from beginning to end. And when I got back to visit my family in Kentucky, the whole town of Frankfort shut down because there was a crazy nut who went to a government building with a gun. So it's like, go figure, you know. I was safe in Egypt, and they have to shut down my hometown because of this. You know, it's not something that that I put in my consciousness, really, to tell you the truth. What is so amazing? Yeah. What was so amazing to me is we walked through the town, and our guide Emil, dear, dear man, he said, "I'm walking you through almost every street here so that the people can see you because you are giving them hope." And you know, as light workers, you know, when we walk through with the vibration of love and making a difference, and we say we want to change the world. It was as simple as walking through the street and buying, you know, a few spices and some incense and, you know, just what Emil called mercy shopping, you know. But it really did give people hope that things can change. And the other thing I wanted to say is that when we were inside the Great Pyramid, we spent a great deal of time meditating and chanting. And there were water bottles that we carried up inside the Great Pyramid. And these water bottles, the water inside the bottles was shaking. It was vibrating, you know, because the whole room was vibrating, because every individual in there, you know, as we were chanting, could feel this crystalline structure of the granite walls inside there. The crystals were vibrating. And so as a result, all of the water inside our own bodies was vibrating. And people come out of that and they're changed. You know, they see the world in a different way. It gets under their skin in a way that is beautiful and spiritually exciting. And I can remember coming back from that experience inside the Great Pyramid, drinking some of the water that was in that bottle and continuing to vibrate because it was drinking the water. The water had been so changed, you know, and I thought to myself, wow, I could just take that water and keep pouring it into, you know, my plants and the stream outside my house, which is, you know, I'm trying to change the molecular structure of it. So it was quite a wonderful experience and powerful to think that something that could so align you to spirit like that is still accessible to us at this time, you know, in a culture that's, you know, run on technology. That old ancient technology of the spirit is still there.
Yeah.
You
well,
remind.
I just want to point out real quick, because I'm just looking at your website while you're talking about your journey and stuff. It's ShamanJourneys.com. Am I correct? Where they can go learn about about your trips. Okay, so everybody check that out. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What I was going to say is, you know, one other thing about building temples here and using the ancient Egyptian magic to do it is you don't really have to go to Egypt, yet when you do, it's as though you're a tuning fork being rung on the granite walls of all of these temples, not just the inside of the Great Pyramid. And when you have passed through that, you have been retuned in a way that you don't even have to say anything. Just your presence walking down the street or entering a room is going to change the resonant vibration. It's going to anneal to the vibration that you bring. And that doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
We love Ethan. Oh. I mean, we can't have enough of it.
Well, I have had, and I know like a lot of listeners, they have had a pull towards Egypt. And I've seen many journeys. I've seen, I believe his name is William Henry does one, and my friend Sierra just did one. But this is the first one I've seen that it resonates, you know, very strongly. And of course, the boat you're talking about, it's funny, I've had a dream of doing a river tour in Egypt for probably about 10 years now, where I wake up in the middle, in the dream, and I'm on a boat. So, I always just chalked it up to a past life, you know, some kind of past life thing. But
maybe it's time for you to take a group to Egypt, and we'll put it together for you.
Well,
there's nothing like it, truly, to wake up in the morning and see those water buffalo coming down to the river to drink beside your boat. And
sometimes they bathe next to you.
Oh.
That's really...
It's funny you said, because my friend Ginny Drake, the one that I met Virginia Gilpin through, she and I have been talking about, we've set a goal in the next few years to go to Egypt. I said, we have to go to Egypt because it resonates and I feel it and it's time to go. She said, all right, let's do it.
Well, considering the world situation, I would say go sooner rather than later. You know, jump on and go in April. And then you'll learn the ropes and can come back and take your tour.
Right. But,
wonderful.
Wonderful. We love it because the people that are called and come with us, it's as though they made some previous contract. Do you know what's causing that static? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah. I can hear you. I'm just trying to, I'm actually trying to see if I can adjust it.
I can try a different line. Let's see what happens if I do it this way.
Still there?
Oh, no.
How's that?
I am not. Yes, it's better.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, I noticed early, but it wasn't really bad. So, cool. We're good.
I'm just trying to catch my train of thought again. But
the fact that the people who come with us have many times a past life experience or a feeling of having been there or been drawn to it, my feeling is that that Egypt was one of the few cultures that lasted for 3,000 years, probably longer than that. You know, it's the oldest culture that we know. It's the first culture that we have sacred texts from, you know. And so I think that if you do believe in past lives, which I do, I think many of us did have lifetimes there. And it was a very powerful and strong culture. That said, I don't necessarily think that all of our past lives are in the past. I believe that, you know, things that happen in our soul's future can occur to us in past lifetime. You know, so in a way, we're learning and leaning toward an understanding of something that may appear to us very ancient, almost like a call from behind us to awaken us.
In our book, The Union of Isis and Thoth, when we built the temple, one of the things that we do in the temple after is time travel and soul travel and oracular work. But there's by location and time travel that is fascinating to experience, because we found that we can, you know, if you were to go to Egypt and you look out over this desert, there's anywhere near the river, you probably wouldn't have to dig more than 10 feet before you came to something from a past time or a past part of the civilization. And so it's like having the ability to do that, what beneath the surface of the Earth radar, and actually travel and explore the ancient temples that are underneath the temples that are the remnants of which are still available to us.
Yeah, we talk about seed temples and seed ideas and temples built upon top of temples, and that it's, the seed has been there so long, and it's the various variations of it that keep remanifesting and bringing the ancient knowledge forward.
So, question. So, if I'm understanding correctly, you mentioned in the very beginning of the show that you have if I understood you correctly, a lineage of thought. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
And so, is that a past life experience, or? And I think I heard in another interview that at Normandy that you have an ISIS lineage. Is that, was I understanding that correctly in another interview, or is that, so? Is it a soul? Is that where the soul connection comes in between the two of you, or?
Well, the Thoth lineage is kind of a it's a connection that's given through transmission to people that's sort of like, I'm envisioning the old switchboards where the operators would plug in and connect people that way. Well, there's a connection that's made through transmission that's similar to that, like being plugged into a light socket, except you're plugged into a direct access with Thoth. And the way I understand it is not hierarchical. It's a lineage of peers. And I've kept it purposely small because it's not, it's meant more to be a brother and sisterhood through this connection that where we all have this direct access to the great teacher's teacher. I mean, to me, Thoth is a step beyond the pantheon in that he is the god of wisdom, he's the scribe, he's the god of the moon, but he also is like the wise uncle that everyone defers to, and when they have a problem, they go to Thoth to find the solution. And it's my theory that if, in fact, there was a Big Bang, and that is actually consistent with some of the ancient Egyptian mythology, that he was able to pass through that dimensional opening with his full memory intact, which is why he's the god of wisdom. And so having that access, and I think many people have that access. And there are many lines and many teachers that are closely connected with Thoth. With regard to ISIS, with Normandy, Normandy, you can speak for your association with ISIS.
Oh, well, I am in this lifetime a priestess of ISIS. I was initiated by Lady Olivia Robertson, who was the arch high priestess at the Fellowship of Isis at Clonegal Castle. And so that happened when I met her at some point after I had already been working very strongly with the hieroglyphs, not knowing what I was doing at all, but simply being led by this idea that there was something there that I had to understand and process. And I was called by the Divine Feminine. When I was a child, there was this knock on the door that I heard and in the middle of a snowstorm, and I open it up, and there's, you know, this beautiful being at the front door. And my mother says, "Who is it?" And I said, "Well," she tells me, "her name's the Ice Queen." And my mother looks, she doesn't see her, but she says, "Well, who is the Ice Queen?" And I said, "It's God's wife. She wants to come in." And so my mother said, "Well, by all means, invite her." So I made my mother make the Ice Queen a cup of coffee, and we sat there and we talked to her. You know, it was quite lovely, you know. And I had visitations from this divine being all the way through my childhood, until I later learned that, in fact, it was Isis who had come to me. And she came as a very nurturing, mothering influence in the midst of a time when I needed a divine feminine to counteract the patriarchal religiosity that I was exposed to in my childhood. And so this divine feminine came into my life to show me a civilizing influence. And I really think that's a lot of what Isis has always been about, has been how to build communities of light workers, how to birth spirit and the potentiality of everything that's available to us in the natural world through our paying attention, you know, and then setting our intention, as Nikki likes to say. And so Isis really has been the master of that for me and has been my teacher all along. Do I feel connection to her in a past life? I do indeed. I feel I've had many past lives. The first time I saw the Temple of Isis at Philae, I broke into tears. It was as if I had suddenly come home. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think as we're talking, I felt this because I'm not the only person. I know you're not the only people that have a calling to Egypt, as you guys mentioned, and probably even at a very early age. As Nikki was talking, I was remembering reading this book about the Egyptian pantheon when I was 11 years old, and and Toth just said that they had a drawing and it literally just screamed at me. Like, I just couldn't stop looking at that page. And 11 years old, you can go into a daydream, you know, state. And so it was, but I think that there's the wisdom is calling out to people at a very early age, because their souls are saying, "Hey, don't forget who you are," and the wisdom that, you know, this wisdom is here for you. And so it just occurred to me when we were talking that, you know, this is a calling for people. And
right,
you know, signs are there.
When I first heard that the Grateful Dead had signed a contract and they were going to be going to Egypt, was the first time I ever thought about Egypt. And it was like being struck by lightning, you know, knowing that I had to be there, not knowing why, not knowing anything except that my life depended on it. And it was decades later, literally, that I realized that that was my homecoming party. And I had no idea. I just knew that the magic was so strong and there was so much synchronicity surrounding every moment that I had to keep returning, and every time I returned, something pivotal would change in my life, until I had to within 2 years, I left the Bay Area, moved to Oregon, and started work on the commitment I made in Egypt to become a healer. And it was that pathway and following the signs that were shown to me along the way that took me to a teacher that then gave me transmission to Thoth and to the teachings that once I was directly connected with Thoth, then he became my teacher. And so all of the books that I've written, he's the architect behind it, although eventually, you know, co-wrote The Anubis Oracle and The Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt with Linda Starwolf, and that was Anubis's work. And then this work with Normandy, the union of Isis and Thoth, it's really the result of magic made in heaven. What can I say? And
very
so
cool.
We just hope that the people who read it find their own way, because they are maps. All of my books. I know Normandy is the literate one. She's the scholar. Yet she combines her scholarship with her poetry and the priestess magic that she carries, and that's really unusual to have that blend in one person. Whereas I tend to be a catalyst rather than a visionary. So my function has been to, in my presence, people have experiences that are life-changing. And so we make a good pair, because
we do.
Of our differences as much as our similarities.
And I have to tell
you
a funny story. Because, oh, I'm sorry. I was going to tell you about how the book was written, because because Nikki and I were both having a little physical difficulties that, you know, those things come with when you age, you know. And so I had to have a shoulder replaced, and she was having trouble with her hip and her back. And so half of the book was written with either one of us lying on our backs, sometimes over Skype, you know. One person would type and the other person's lying down, you know, channeling or trancing in some of the material. And at other times, we're sitting at Nikki's house inside the little studio apartment that she has in the bed together, because it's cold. We have our laptops on our stomachs, and we can't sit up because neither of us can sit up at that point. So we're typing away.
We spent a month flat on our backs.
Yeah, and we did the same thing after the trip
in
Egypt. We sat there and finished the book. Sitting at
most
of the time in one bed, yeah, talking to each other back and forth on the computer. It was very funny, you know. Talk about a marriage. It was a marriage.
And then
it was.
4 days after returning from Egypt, Normandy was in the hospital having a full shoulder replacement. It was that close. I mean, she was so overdue. It was just amazing that the two of us, in the level of pain that we were both experiencing, were able to write this book. In some ways, you know, talking to people about the labor of being a writer and of delivering a book, which is very much like delivering a child, except generally the labor is longer. it's been remarkable, and I think that, you know, I look at my granddaughter who's now 4, and I remember her mother's labor for 30 hours, and how brave she was and what she went through, and then that's really just the beginning. Just like when the book is published, that's the beginning. It's, you think you're done, but you're just starting. It's like, do you know much about the tradition, the Tibetan tradition of the treasure hunters? Oh, I can't. The termas. It's like a terma tradition, where in the Tibetan terma tradition, the person would spend their life listening and paying attention so they could be at the right place at the right moment to receive the terma, and it could be an earth terma or a mind terma. But it's however it comes to them, it's up to them to translate it and then find a way to share it with the world. And so every step that you take is a clue on the treasure hunt of your life that is in search of this unique teaching that has been left for you to find and bring out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel about our books. Would you agree, Normandy?
I do agree. I do agree.
Wonderful. So, Normandy, I know you want, well, you have to leave to go back into class here shortly. Did you want to talk about any future things you have coming up?
Well, I am teaching a class, a month of classes online at Mother House of the Goddess. And so it's based on the Feast of Light book, which celebrates a different Egyptian goddess every month. The book is filled with feasts of the Egyptian goddesses, so it's a really good way to get to know them. I just hope people will tune into that. And I hope people will join me for the trip in April. If you have any questions about that, you can email me. You can go to my website and click contact and shoot me a message. I'd be happy to chat with you about that. I'm going with another of our colleagues, Indigo Ron Love, and I are leading this trip. So very excited about that. And Nikki and I will be doing a mystery school this summer in Eugene. Nikki, do you have the date right in front of you? I think it's August.
I don't
August.
Have the dates in front of me, but I know it's in August.
Right. Right. And so I'm hoping people will sign up for that because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of excitement. And as we said, yes, yeah, Spirit's going to tell us what it's about when we get closer.
But what's exciting is being the first one after we've completed the round that took us to this book, it's going to be brand new. It's something.
It's going to be brand new.
Yeah, a new door is opening in our work, and it's going to be very exciting to be part of that. We're going to teach together in Las Vegas in March. That'll be fun.
Yes, that will be fun.
Equinox
weekend. Sounds
weekends.
Like a pretty active life. A lot of stuff going on. It's wonderful.
Yes. Jeremy, I'm going to have to jump off, but I want to thank you profusely for having us on here and for being such a good listener and a welcoming presence. I really appreciate your time.
You're most welcome, and have a wonderful class.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Normandy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Nikki, I saw and hear you doing a talk with Bruce Lipton as well in Seattle.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. In July, I think it's July 15th, the week before, we're speaking together at the Oregon Country Fair, which is, you know, it's, I don't know how old it is now. It must be at least 45 years old. It's one of the first original, you know, hippie gatherings that's matured but not changed its values. And so it's really a fun place to teach. And then we're going up to Seattle where we're going to do an evening and a day-long workshop together I love working with Bruce Lipton. He's just a delight. Have you had the pleasure of interviewing him yet?
I have not. I've interviewed somebody that lives in Eugene with you. I've become pretty close with is Anika Swami. And
oh right, of course.
Wonderful. But never Bruce. I know that one of my friends emailed him, and he was right in the middle of writing a book. And
right.
He wasn't taking interviews.
Yeah, he's in New Zealand now. This time of year, he spends teaching in New Zealand. But he's very accessible, and I'd be happy to connect you. But in any event, it has been a pleasure talking to you. And let me think if is there anything else that you would like to know from me? Oh, I can tell you some things that I'm doing that people should know about. I have a thing called the Planetary Healing Call to Action, which is free. And if you get on my mailing list, you'll get an invitation. I try and do it either once a month or once every 2 months, depending upon my schedule. And we come together and we do generally work from my book, Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation, that I co-wrote with my husband, Mark Hallert. But we're open to all other teachings as well to share. And I've been asked to do the next one on cancer, because I did, before I did this service, I did for 8 years a phone bridge free monthly for healing cancer, and many of those are podcasts that are available on my website. So there's lots of the cancer bridges and the planetary healing calls to action recordings on my website. And so those are things I really like to let people know, so we can build that community, because I believe in the exponential power of our numbers. And when we come together and make medicine, we can accomplish so much more as a community than we can individually.
Yeah, this had the weird thing where my phone cut off for like a minute while you were talking, so I had to reconnect. But I thought that was interesting, because energy can build and mess with technology sometimes. But I find this very interesting, that most people, and the word shamanism or shamanic in Egypt, they would never think that would go together. Might be a whole other subject for another show, but, you know, I just thought it popped into my head to ask that question.
It could be, and I could give the quick answer really fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
There's a book by Jeremy Nadler. He's a scholar in Oxford, I think, and it's called Shamanic Wisdom in the Pyramid Text. And he translated the pyramid text and expressed in his translation that those instructions that were always considered for the dead pharaoh were actually for the initiations for the living pharaoh, so that he could keep that direct access, that direct communion with Source, with the divine, with the family of the Netaru in Egypt or beyond, to what we would call God, which I don't think any of us are wired to understand. But that those initiations were shamanistic rites of passage. And when you look at the text from that point of view, it was a shamanic culture. Magic for them was the science of the day. It was just how life was.
Right.
And and the rites that they went through and the rites that we go through, although we don't do them as in the physical way as they had to do it in Egypt, are very similar to, for example, my first vision quest. I spent five nights, no food, no water, no light, sealed in a sweat lodge. And just translate that into the technu magic of the Egyptians, where they had to be in enclosed spaces like sarcophagi and go through very similar rituals. It's not that different.
Yeah. It makes a whole lot of sense when you're talking about it. And when I saw it, I was like, no, that makes sense. But, it also, because our mind is not used to that, but shamanism is something greater than, it's not what people think it is, at least the layperson. I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there.
That's why I enjoy teaching with scientists like Fred Alan Wolf or Bruce Lipton, because both of them have gone with me to Egypt. And it was a very long time ago that Fred went, but it wasn't that long ago that Bruce and I went. And how the teachings had developed and how it worked was that the people, and we had a large group, but whatever it was that came through, the magic that came through, and it wouldn't come through till the night before, we'd have to go into the temple. And then we would give him the download, and no matter how outrageous it was or how shamanic it was, he was able to translate it into intellectual terms that anybody could understand. And, of course, many, many of those people on that trip were there because of him. And so they came with that intellectual head, but because he could translate the shamanic work into language that was understood by those people, that made that 18-inch passage between the head and the heart disappear, and they were able to have the full experience.
How wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. And, yeah. All right. We only have 2 minutes left, but now I could talk to you for another hour. So I just want to let everybody know, I want to remind everybody, we were talking about Normandy and Nikki's work, but their book is The Union of Isis and Thoth, Magic and Initiatory Practices of Ancient Egypt. So it's on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and well on their website.
Or actually, we have a web store, HathorsMirror.com.
Okay, there you go, HathorsMirror.com.
And then my Normandy didn't give her website. It's NormandyEllis.com.
Okay.
And mine is ShamanicJourneys.com.
Yeah, and I have both of those, just so everybody knows, down in the description of the show as well.
Oh, great.
So you'll be able to see that when if you're listening to this on YouTube, it's down in the description. Nikki, it's been absolutely wonderful to have you in Normandy on the show, and I'm looking forward to connecting with you and having you on the show in the future. Much luck to you.
Thank you so much. I very much appreciate your having us. I've enjoyed speaking with you, and like Normandy said, we both really appreciate that you chose to spend this time with us. Thank you.
Absolutely, and many blessings for today. And,
thank you.
Bye. And everybody else, thank you for listening to Soul Talk. It's always been a pleasure, and we are now coming up on our 5-year anniversary of the show, so it's pretty exciting. So everybody have a blessed week and a wonderful day. Bye-bye.